This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Anish, we started off the show talking about a tough night for the ACC and Florida State in the national championship game for the women's soccer title. And the Noles, the number one overall seed, taking on the 11 seed Santa Clara Broncos, and looked like life was pretty good there. Florida State finally scored. Been a while, right? 300 plus minutes in regulation time and OT time, but they took the lead 1-0. It's running late, 6-7 minutes to go in the game, and just could not close the deal. Lose it in penalty kicks on top of that. Really a tough, tough way to go out for Florida State.
I thought they had it. And what was it? 6-7 minutes to go. Yep. Santa Clara off of Florida State mistake gets the equalizer. Nobody scores in overtime. And here's the play where Florida State turns it over. Santa Clara makes them pay. I give credit to the Broncos. They beat Florida State, UNC, Clemson. But you go to penalty kicks, and you brought this up on the show yesterday. That's playing with fire. That's playing with gasoline. And Florida State's been doing this dance now for a couple of games where, you know, they haven't scored in regulation. In this game, they score one, but they give one up. You go to penalty kicks, weird things can happen. And again, I always equate it to three-card Monty, left, center, or right. And when you hit the post, you're not picking a card. So that's no bueno.
Well, and two, in the PKs, first two shots hit the post, and you're just like, yeah. You just, you know, yeah. Like you said, you get to that stage, and you got to close the deal. But Mark Krikorian has built a phenomenal, not great, phenomenal program at Florida State. And I thought his post-game remarks put everything totally in perspective. Here's Coach after the tough loss last night.
I'm proud of our kids. I think, as I said to you folks after the last round, all of these young women, I think, are to be commended, not just the Florida State kids, all of them, for the sacrifice that they've made through the course of the season, the schools, the conferences, the NCAA, in putting all of this together and allowing it to go on this year in a year like no other, as everyone has suggested. But I think that, it of course hurts. It's hard to lose. It's hard to lose in penalties. But still the same, I think we have a lot to be proud of, a lot to be grateful for, and I'm glad that I have the collection of kids on my team with the uniform that they're wearing. Really proud of their effort and what they've provided.
Florida State will be back. There's no question in my mind, but that was a golden opportunity last night. There's no question about that. That's a tough one to lose on. And I mentioned David Teal, who's on with us from time to time, had an amazing tweet last night after the game, and I read it to you in hour one. But in each of the three seasons that the ACC placed three teams to reach the semifinals in the Women's College Cup, happened in 2011, 2013, and this year, where you had three of the four teams are from the ACC. In every instance, all three of those years, the team that won the national championship ended up from California, which is just, that's just goofy. In 2011, Stanford won it all, even though Duke, Florida State, and Wake Forest were there. In 2013, UCLA won it all when Florida State, Virginia, and Virginia Tech were there. And this go-around, we had Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia, but it was Santa Clara taking it back home on the West Coast. So, tough deal for the ACC. Got to be honest with you. We had five teams in the College Cup, two on the men's side with Pittsburgh and North Carolina. We had three with the ladies and just could not figure out a way to bring the hardware back here to the ACC. It's tough.
Well, the solution is to expand into California. Chico State Associate Membership for Soccer. Let's make that happen.
I got to be honest with you. As much as we talk soccer this year, and the league is just fantastic, I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed that we didn't see somebody hoisting the trophy. I just had it in my mind, at least somebody on the men's side or the women's side was going to get the deal done. And it's hard to believe we came away with nothing in the national championship department in soccer this year. Just, it's the way it goes.
Yeah, especially with all the teams, you know, especially Florida State, the one seed, even though they weren't scoring, you felt they were a heavy favorite against Santa Clara. And penalty kicks, man. Penalty kicks,
that's
is
tough.
Boy, that's just, it's a game of chance.
That's it. That's it. All right, speaking of a game of chance, which is the perfect segue, we're going to create something new here. At the tail end of yesterday's show, we were kidding around about soccer stuff, one way or the other. And today, you are showcasing your prized, and I do mean prized, PSG sweatshirt. All right, now you need to explain to folks, if they, in case they missed this yesterday, because it will set up what we're getting ready to do with you. But you said, hey, tomorrow, meaning Tuesday, I'm going to have on my PSG gear. So explain to folks what's going on here.
Yeah, so I like Dallin Cuff, probably if he's watching right now, this is going to make him really angry. So I am the biggest fraud when it comes to soccer. I just like the jacket. I mean, that's literally all it is. I've got the FC Roma one behind me too. So, you know, when we go and travel, it started with a Juventus jacket. I just thought it looked cool. So we got a Juventus one, and then it was PSG and FC Roma and FC Barcelona. And I'll wear them, and I like them, and I just think I like the way they look. There really is nothing beyond that. I'm not a fan of any of these teams. And so I'll be on planes, and I've worn this on planes because it's comfortable, and people will say, hey, did you see what PSG did? And I won't even lie. The first time they said PSG, I was like, huh? Like your jacket. I go, oh, that's what that is. Okay. PSG. That's the shortened version of the team's name. So yeah, like I'm the guy that soccer people hate. Like, wait, yeah, you're just wearing the jacket? Yeah, I like the way the jacket looks. But yeah, I'm a fraud.
All right, we're gonna call this the Dallin Cuff game. All right. So that we're gonna give Dallin all the love here because I know he was on with me yesterday and he's like, Pack, are you mocking soccer? I said, I'm not mocking soccer. I don't know enough to know to mock soccer. So we're gonna give Dallin Cuff his own game show here. And I'm gonna ask you, fraud, Anish, soccer fraud. I'm gonna give you a name of a player. You have to tell me if it's either PSG or an ACC player, all right? You good?
Oh, boy.
So it's PSG or ACC. Okay. You ready? The first name is Colin Dagba. Colin Dagba.
ACC?
That'd be incorrect. That'd be PSG. He's a player. Colin Dagba. And I will tell you, for anybody that falls under the PSG category, if they knocked on my door with pizzas, I'd have no earthly idea who they are. I don't care if they were wearing full gear. I'd have no earthly idea who they are. So don't feel bad. Next name is Maxon Capo. Maxon Capo.
That's got to be PSG.
That would be correct. You know, we need to have a sound effect for this too. Like, you know, go or something. I don't know what we're going to do. We'll create this as we go along here. Third name is Stefan Sigurdarson.
Oof. I feel like this is a trick question. ACC.
All right, I'm going to give you – you got it right. I'm going to give you bonus if you can tell me which ACC team. Don't look.
Well, I can read the graphic. It says Boston College.
You know, you Syracuse guys are so smart. You know, you can't get anything past the Syracuse guys. You just can't do it. All right, next name is let's go with this one. Marco Moratti.
All right, that sounds like a European League player, right? So PSG.
That would be correct. Marco Moratti.
Now, what's I'm doing, he doing it right here. You're on
a roll. I hate to say
throwing darts like Ted Lasso, man.
The Dallin Cuff game. This is what it is. All right, next name. Let me pick one here. Let me go Christo Strickler. Christo Strickler.
I feel confident with this one, ACC.
And all right, you're correct. You want to guess the team? Don't look. No, you looked. You looked. I saw you. You looked. Typical.
No, I didn't see it. North Carolina.
That'd be wrong. Wrong. Take the point away. Wrong. All right, next one. Juan Bernay.
PSG.
Of course. I was going to give you my French accent with that. Juan Bernay. That's PSG. All right. How about this one? Arturo Ordóñez?
PSG?
No. No. Ooh. Wrong answer. Pitt. All right, I'm going to give you one more.
ACC, okay.
Yeah. I would have guessed like you did, though. I would have been incorrect on that one, too. Nick Perriano.
Arturo. You know, if it was Arthur.
Right.
It was Arthur. That
was the curveball. Right. Yeah. Arturo was the fake left go right on that. That was a penalty kick. Yeah. Dive all left, right. I go right. Last one is Nick Perriano.
Nick Perriano, ACC?
That would be right. Want to guess?
Wake Forest.
No, that was a good guess. Duke. D-U-K-E. There it is. All right, we'll work on that game. We'll work on that game. The Dallin Cuff game is what we're going to call it. Because you're right. Because
Dallin is watching fuming. This, and he is infuriated.
Yeah, he's mad.
He goes, "Are you guys really doing this?"
Yeah, he's mad at us because
I'm going to get emails and texts from Dallin. Dude, take that jacket off. You were not wearing that jacket for the last 45 minutes of the show.
Yeah, he is such a soccer purist that he looks upon guys like me and you like you're really kind of disrespecting the game. Like we are not up to his standard to discuss soccer with him. And that's why I told him yesterday on the radio show that he was my soccer guy, that anytime I had a question about soccer, he was the first guy that I would call. And then he ragged my Rolodex. He said, "Man, your Rolodex is pretty weak. If I'm your go-to, I'm just telling you, if I have a question about soccer, Dallin Cuff is the guy. He's the guy, especially here in ACC land.
Let me ask you this. With soccer, here's the thing, right? So I feel maybe the jacket gets me into the club. I can sneak in. But then you start to wonder, would you fit in, right?
No.
If you went and watched soccer with real soccer people.
No.
Would you fit in? That's where I'm kind of, you know, like maybe I'm totally wrong here, and I could be. And again, I'm not a soccer guy, so I'm a total fraud here. I just have the jacket, but I always get the sense it's kind of this club, and it's if you don't know the password, like no one's going to give you a hint. If that makes sense.
That's you and I are on the same page. And it's not that I want to be a part of the club. It's just I know I'm not going to be in the club. Right, it's one of those deals. Like, hey, I say it all the time. I just want to be entertained. Just entertain me. Somebody score. But I'm with you on that. But Dallin Cuff, he's watching right now. He's not happy with either one of us. Here's what we are going to do. When we come back, we're going to bring on really a guy that's always interesting, always insightful, and he's got a big one coming up because you've got Virginia and Georgetown. It's 4-5 in the NCAA tournament, and our man Lars Tiffany is up next. We'll see what's going on with the Hoos as they get ready for the Hoyas. Should be a good one. It's coming up next right here, Packer and Durham. We're on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Power Hour. Let's head up to Charlottesville, Virginia. Because Virginia is getting ready to jump on Georgetown. It is a 4-5 national seed matchup, just the way you like it. Lars Tiffany joins us. Coach, good morning. How are we doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Great to be back on with you, Mark. And I love the special host here, Anish. Great to see you again.
Well, we went heavy.
What's
lacrosse.
Up, Lars?
Well, we went heavy lacrosse. And so Anish, this is in his sweet spot. So this will be an easy one. Before we get moving forward, let's look backwards a second. Man, you guys had enough time off, 2-3 weeks. What was that like from a mental perspective? Just saying, I know the physical part, but mentally getting back into the flow of playing a match that it's a loser leave town match. How tough was that?
Yeah, that is a challenge. And again, give credit for Bronco Mendenhall giving us the template. You know, obviously college football coaches have to do this annually when you're getting ready for a bowl game, you know, 3-4 week layoff, and you've got to be peaking without having your normal week preparation. And he gave us a great template. But again, Bronco's a deep thinker. Step back. What's the objectives? And so we came up with our objectives to be healthier, faster, more skilled, and tighter as a team. Can we hit those four objectives during those 3 weeks? And we wouldn't know the results until the competition. And Bryant gave us a great effort. And the more I've had to think about that game and reflect upon it, watching a film, we played well. We had a really good opponent. And I'm really glad we had the 3 week preparations we did, because we were not that rusty. This was not a slow starting Virginia performance. This was just battling a team that was ready to beat us, that was prepared emotionally. So I really like our preparation that we had. And thank goodness for it, or we would be done. We wouldn't be playing Georgetown.
Lars, you've always kind of branched outside of lacrosse for ideas. You mentioned going to Bronco Mendenhall on figuring out how to prep 3 weeks between games. Where else do you look outside of lacrosse in terms of coaches or even, you know, business leaders, whatever it might be, for inspiration to help you in lacrosse?
I love it. Well, most of us coaches will lean on the military sector for sure, you know, in terms of the inspiration. You know, they're obviously dealing at a much higher level of gravity and decision making with lives at stake. But, you know, the forming a team and coming together where there can be no mishaps. And so we've had Navy SEALs speak to us, high level special operations folks speak to our team. But then on the sports side, what's been fantastic is having access to Tony Bennett's practices. And we don't do it very often, a couple times a year. But every time I come away with a new drill or two, just watching the way he teaches that pack line defense, and me on the defensive side of the ball, always looking for little things to steal, and just the way it's communicated, how he enforces that pack line and incorporating to our own team defense. Because again, the similarities with 5-on-5 half court or 6-on-6 half field is tremendous. So leaning on the resources we have here, which are simply fantastic. You know, Carla Williams continues to expand this department, the resources, the facilities. We've got great coaches around here. Why would I not lean on them and utilize them to become a better coach and a better program?
Lars, I would assume that having as tough a match as you did against Bryant is maybe the perfect remedy. I would much rather have a game like that in which you really had to fight, come back, figure out a way to win, play great defense, as opposed to kind of having the cruise control, kind of what Georgetown did to Syracuse. I know from your perspective, hey, it's always easier when I got a 10-goal lead. But in terms of this tournament and moving forward, you know, listen, everybody's really good and really talented, and nothing's going to be easy. It just seems, though, having a match like you did against Bryant could only help you moving forward.
You're exactly right, Mark. Now, if you told me that late third quarter when we were down by two, you know, I would have pushed you back to go back up in the stands.
Where you belong.
Get out of my face. I'd like to get to the quarterfinals in a much smoother way. But, you know, just having coached at Brown for 10 years and playing Bryant annually, we knew what was coming. And we every year we played Bryant, we were the Brown staff. It felt like the higher-ranked team lost. It was always great battles. So, but you're right. Stepping back from it, and I talked to Dom Starja, you know, communicated with him after the game, and he said exactly what you just said. You know, to have to persevere was going to be better for us moving forward, to have had that challenge and to recognize one of the things we also talked about with Bronco is when he said week two with that 3 week layoff, don't just go back to normal practice. Identify areas that you think really need work, justify what you're practicing. And one of the areas was late game time management. And so that was fantastic that came up. And you're right. If we were winning by 10 goals, we don't get to reinforce what we had practiced. And so the fact that we did well maintaining possession of the ball and killing off the end of the game was a direct result of that attention to that detail. So again, thanks to the Bronco giving us the ideas to put that plan in place. And it's certainly the men executing it with Ian Laviano making some great late game decisions, and securing the win.
Lars, I want to go back to what you said about Tony Bennett. I hear he might be trying to steal one of your players for basketball.
there's been an extension of interest. We'll see. Yes, 6'7" Cole Kastner was a highly touted basketball recruit as well. Not really ACC level, but, you know, there was some lower level Division I, and certainly other divisions were interested in him joining them and playing basketball for their universities. And we were fortunate that he chose us to play lacrosse. And he's well ahead of where we thought he'd be. Project 39, that's his number. Cole Kastner is so far ahead because, again, we didn't have much of a fall. And so really getting our hands onto him is started in January. And for him to earn a starting spot with only a couple months of reps and experience with the defense is fantastic. And it's a tribute to who Cole is as an athlete. We talked about half-court basketball and half-field lacrosse, a lot of similarities on the defensive end. And then his athleticism. I mean, he is as athletic as you get. We had him covering Bryant's top scorer for most of the game on Sunday. And we'd like him that type of matchup because he is so long. But, yeah, Tony Bennett and his staff have taken notice. Now, they've also picked up another person in the transfer portal since they reached out to us. So I'm not sure they're still looking. But Cole and I, we said we're going to have a conversation once the season's over. And give Cole credit. He said that. He said, Coach, I don't want to talk about it now. Let's talk about it later. But I said, I'm open to trying this. You know, we just got to figure out the months of February and March. That would be the tricky part when we're both playing games.
Lars, now let's move forward. Up next, Georgetown. You saw Syracuse a bunch this year. I'm sure you watched tape of what Georgetown did to the Orange, and your eyeballs probably popped out of your head because, man, they wore out the Orange. I mean, they took Syracuse to the woodshed. So when you scout Georgetown, what are we going to see this weekend?
Yeah, we're going to see the fastest team left in the tournament. This is a very athletic team. Kevin Warren and his staff have assembled athletes, and you can see it on the defensive end. They're trying not to slide too much. You got to earn a double team, and then the midfield play. You know, whether it's in a 6v6 setting or from defense to offense, how quickly they go. They're playing some guys who play both ways, two-way midfielders. You know, Dylan Hess, number 40. You know, highlights both ends of the field, but they've got athletes everywhere, and so it's it's athletically. We're astounded by what we're seeing here. And then unfortunately for us and the rest of the teams that have played them, the two specialty areas, they're very good. Riley at the X, he's doing a fantastic job. He's gone against the best, you know, they played Denver three times and then McElroy in the goal. So, Kevin Warren has assembled a really talented and athletic. That's the thing that really steps out is how athletic they are.
Lars, when you guys won it all in 2019, there was no history of postseason success on that roster. Now you have that championship pedigree in your back pocket. Where do you feel that shows up this time of the year?
Yeah, you see it with Alex Rode, the way he played on Sunday. You know, against a really great effort by Bryant. And Alex makes 18 saves. You know, as we were down 10-8 with a couple minutes left in the third quarter, we needed a mount of comeback there, but Alex just didn't let the ball go in, you know, until the very end. They got one, but you know, Alex made some huge saves late in that game, and that's he's been on the biggest stage, and he's made those pressure plays in the playoffs. I felt it, you know, felt it with our offensive balance. I thought we had the best balance that we've had in terms of decision making. You know, we're a team that's not afraid of throwing the ball away and having some turnovers and no repercussions. Let's just move on. Let's get our ride set up. Let's play. But we were more poised than we've probably been all year. And so what we need to do is just get more balls from the faceoff backs. You know, we haven't had the last couple of games. We just haven't had enough possessions that we're accustomed to. But in terms of I felt the poise on offense and a comfort in the goal. That could be attributed to, yes, it's do or die. You got to win today, but give Matt Moore and you know the ability to him to be more of a facilitator and not pushing and forcing too much really helped us on Sunday. And his experience is going to be tremendous having going into this game at Hofstra.
Coach, do you realize that every time you've hooked up with Georgetown in the quarters, you've never lost University of Virginia? And both times that happened, Virginia went on to win the national title. Were you aware of that?
I had no idea about that, to tell you the truth. Is that a good thing? Is that
Here's the good thing.
The piano on my back?
Well, no. The good thing is good things comes in threes. I mean, you've seen them twice, and this is the third go around. That's the positive vibe I'm putting on you.
I'm looking there. It says 2006. Okay, so 15 years ago. Most of my guys were born by then. They were alive.
You got that going for you. The bobble, listen, the bobblehead agrees with it. I'm just going to tell you that right now. The bobblehead's going with it.
Yeah.
Those 2 years, 03 and 06, those were good years for Virginia.
Those are very good years. Yeah, you can see a national championship photo behind me there, 1952. We got the other ones, the more recent ones are in the other staff's office. But yeah, the 03 and 06, they're up there as well. Those are fabulous teams that Dom Stars had built here and molded great men, great lacrosse players. Yeah, it's tradition. There's such a fantastic tradition. You know, that's why I'm so fortunate to be sitting in this seat. And to be able to build upon it is very difficult because of the success that, you know, Glenn Thiel, Ace Adams, and certainly Dom Stars I had here. And we're fortunate to be in this position to see if we can build another one of those special years. But heck of an opponent in a way. Holy cow.
Anish, I think Anish wants to know about the relationship you've got with Bronco and how that's been all tied in together.
Yeah, with Bronco, it's. I think about the pressures on a Power Five head football coach, and what they need to do, the strategic planning, the recruiting, bringing together, you know, over 100 men and all the coaches together on one path, one plan. How do you have time to worry about the other sports and others around? But there's Bronco. He's amazing. I received a text from him Sunday night after the win. I've received texts from him after regular season wins. He branches out. He's had us over. My family and I have been over riding horses on his ranch that he's got over here on the western side of town. He is a giver. It's amazing how much he extends himself to the others around him and is so much more others focused than I would ever imagine a Power Five football coach to be.
Well, listen, we wish you the best. We appreciate you making time with us. And again, going to be a great matchup. 4 against 5, incredibly competitive. But you know what? It beats sitting on the couch, my man. So roll up your sleeves and get after them.
Yeah, we're fortunate. We're fortunate to have this pressure. You know, pressure is a gift, you know, and we embrace this pressure. And we're excited to have this challenge.
You got it, man. Best of luck, Lars. Thanks, man. Take care.
Great to see you. Thank you, Mark. Thanks, Anish.
Lars Tiffany.
Appreciate it, Lars.
Could be some match. 4 against 5. You mentioned Notre Dame and Maryland. 3-6. Well, 4-5 will be good too. Another grab your popcorn moment this weekend with Virginia and Georgetown.
Yeah, Georgetown's got some horses, and their only knock this season, the first half, was they hadn't really played anybody. And we saw what they could do the second half of the season. They beat Denver twice, which was no small task. And as impressive as anybody opening weekend when they beat Syracuse by 10 goals. They got a kid, Jake Caraway, who's got a hammer, strong at goal, strong at faceoffs. There's a lot of pieces there. There is a lot of pieces there. They're just untested. The stage is new to them. Virginia's been there, reigning national champions, and I do think there is something to be said for knowing what it takes and being familiar with the stakes and the pressure of this time of the year.
Quick break. When we return, we go back to a topic we had earlier, and we'll have some fan interaction with this one. The return of the Blue Bloods. Is everybody ready to get back to elite status? We will explain when we come back. Anish filling in for Wes. It's Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
In Durham on a Tuesday, we talked about this a little earlier today in the show, and we want to go through our entire list here, but we discussed about the number of blue bloods in the ACC whose programs are doing okay, but I mean, can they get back to where they want to be? And we kind of led off with Syracuse lacrosse, who's got an incredible tradition and history. 11 national championships, but they haven't won one since 09, only one Final Four since then, and that was in 2013. And again, the early departure of the tournament, especially the way they went out, it's got people talking about, man, can Syracuse get back? And it got us thinking about some other teams in the league, Anish. And we're going to go through this list, and I know we finished up with North Carolina Hoops a couple hours ago, and we'll go back to that here in a second. But I'm going to give another one to you, and that is Notre Dame women's basketball, because obviously Muffet.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Muffet had an incredible run. When you start talking about, you know, Final Fours, national championships, the whole routine, and then you make a transition from the legendary coach to, all right, tag, you're it. That's always an interesting transition. It's never seamless, and there's always the uphill climb, right? So when it comes to Notre Dame women's basketball, 23-28 over the last two seasons, and we talked about the standard, which is what Muffet has created in South Bend. Niella, well, listen, we like this lady a lot. She's a really good coach. She understands what Notre Dame women's basketball is all about. And while the last 2 years have been tough, I got to be honest with you. My gut reaction is they've got everybody and their brother coming back next year. I think they're going to be right back to where they want to be for the upcoming season. At least I feel that way. And we'll see how it plays out. Just curious, what do you think?
Yeah, Pack, the last two seasons too, right? Think about just what that entailed. Last season was cut short. This season, you lead into it. You still have this pandemic raging on. For a new head coach, that's not the easiest entry point, right? Like, these last two seasons, if you're a new head coach, there's got to be a little bit of a mulligan. But I think it makes you appreciate what Muffet McGraw did. I think you got to give this a little bit of time. Like, when we have a normal rollout and a normal season, then I think you can be a fair judge. But these last two seasons have been so bizarre, so weird, so unconventional, and there really has been no blueprint or roadmap to navigate it.
Well, of course, there's going to be teams at Louisville and at NC State that, again, great programs, and you know what you're up against. But I something tells me that Notre Dame will throw themselves right back into the mix. I just think with the amount of production that they've got coming back, and granted, we got the transfer portal. You don't know what a roster is going to look like. But for the most part, as we sit here today on May the 18th, given what Coach Ivey's got coming back, I think Notre Dame will be right back in that conversation sooner than later. We also touched base with the fact that Hubert Davis just celebrated his birthday. He's now the new man in charge at the University of North Carolina. Six NCAA men's basketball championships. I mean, the Dean Smith, Roy Williams combination was sensational. Hubert, of course, you know, you follow Roy Williams, there's always going to be an interesting transition. But if anybody knows North Carolina basketball, it's this guy, right? It's this guy. And again, I don't know what a roster is going to look like for 21-22, but your take on North Carolina moving forward, big picture.
Always hard one to follow a legend. You know, the old adage, you always want to be the guy after the guy after the guy, not the guy after the guy, but Hubert Davis has been groomed for this job. I think he'll do well. The good thing is in college basketball these days, you can get things right in one recruiting class, but team building, not just for Hubert Davis, for everybody, it has changed. We're so far past the days where you can bring in a class and project them 2-3 years out. Look at Pittsburgh, great example. Yep. You know, you thought they had a great foundation with Xavier Johnson and Audis Toney and Trey McGowans. They're all gone, all of them. So it's hard to project forward, and North Carolina's success even under Roy Williams was with older teams. So maybe it changed the approach. Maybe it's a few more transfers than we were used to. Maybe it's a few more one and done types than we were used to at UNC. I think you're going to have to be flexible here. And college basketball now is like a year to year ordeal. I think it's harder than ever to be a college basketball coach in this climate.
And fan. I think for that matter, too, that we talked about, yeah. Hey, you just don't know what a roster looks like. You fall in love with a player and you're like, oh, man, we got him for another couple of years. You don't know if you're going to have him for another couple of hours at this rate with the transfer portal. So, like I said, it's a new landscape entirely for college hoops. And that's why we talked about that earlier about, is this a one semester sport? Do you have to kind of think out of the box a little bit where college basketball now fits in the big picture? I think you do. But for Hubert, it's going to be fascinating to watch North Carolina in this transition period. I think it's going to be interesting to watch the Atlantic Coast Conference in this transitional period. I mean, Josh Pastner the other day was talking about maybe upwards to 42-45% of an entire new roster in the Atlantic Coast Conference totally, which is just, you can't even comprehend what that looks like. So we'll see where that goes moving forward. All right, now football-wise, there's a number of teams in this league that need to be good to get the ACC's national narrative changed, where it's just Clemson and everybody else. Well, I think it runs a little deeper than that. However, there's a team like Miami, the U, the Canes, with all their great tradition and history. Five national championships. Is the U back? But you know what? They've only had one 10-win season since 2003, and that's when Mark Richt and the guys put it together in 2017. Again, we're going to find out real quick with Miami for the upcoming football season, Anish. But what do you think? Can the U ever get back to its lofty status?
I do think they can, and I thought this past season was a huge step forward. They got a dynamic quarterback in Derek King from Houston. Unfortunately, he tears his ACL in the bowl game. Supposedly, he's got like the Wolverine adamantium in his bones. He's healing quickly. He's recovering. And if he's back and healthy for the fall, that's a huge difference for Miami. Manny Diaz knows the area, knows how to recruit the area. And the one shift we have seen with Miami under Manny Diaz is embracing the new philosophy in college football, going spread, going with a little bit more tempo. It's not a roster full of, you know, tight ends. You're in South Florida. Speed is in your backyard. You can recruit fast guys by basically throwing a pebble down the street. They are everywhere. Everyone is coming to South Florida to get the fastest and the quickest guys. So now Miami offensively has finally embraced this idea. Hey, like, instead of playing two wide receivers, let's play four. And so it's just a little bit more of an innovative approach offensively, more of a cutting-edge approach than what we saw for 20 years from that program. I think that will pay dividends down the road for Miami.
Not to mention the fact that Manny and his staff, I think, have done a great job in the transfer portal. I think they've been one of the best in the country as far as picking, selecting guys that fit with what they do and have had great production. Florida State's got to be on this list, all right? If you put Miami on the list, you got to put the Noles on the list. They've won three national championships, but the last couple of years have been a struggle. And Mike Norvell, tag year it, you got to figure this thing out. What about Florida State moving forward?
For me, Pack, it's a longer project here. You got to undo some things from the last three, four seasons. It kind of went south the last couple of years. The Jimbo Fisher, Willie Taggart didn't work out. You hear a lot of whispers of just, you know, not the right guys and the right mix in the locker room. And I'm a big believer that in football, you really need to build your program on the scaffold of culture. And culture is kind of one of these catchy words, but you hear it with Dabo Swinney and you hear it with Nick Saban and the process. Florida State still has to build that up. I'm a big fan of Norvell. I covered some of his games at Memphis, saw what he did there, really elevating that program after taking the reins from Justin Fuente. I think he can be successful, but I don't think this is a quick fix. This may be a couple of years down the road. Florida State fans may need to exhibit a little more patience than they're used to.
Well, I think it's pivotal for the Atlantic Coast Conference to have Miami to be really good, Florida State to be really good, not throw Virginia Tech in the mix too, given their tradition and history. And again, a really important year for Justin Fuente coming up, needless to say. But there's just a few of the blue bloods in the ACC in multiple sports that are looking to kind of get back into the stratosphere of elite. And we'll see how all that stuff plays out. By the way, we've got, speaking of elite, something cool for you. We got the best of the ACC Rowing Championship. That's Sunday night from 7 to 8 Eastern, and the best of the ACC Track and Field Championship. That's next Monday from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern. As you know, nobody covers the ACC and all the sports like we do. You can watch both extensive recaps right here on ACC Network or the ESPN app. When we come back, we got a couple things to get into, including a little baseball. And you know what? When the dogs get together with the jackets, you know it's all good. A little one stat for game two. All that's coming your way. A little baseball to finish off the show. It's Packer and Durham here on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. And Anish. Everybody on vacation. You know how we roll. Fake left, go right. Anish, I think, is frozen in time. If we get him back, we get him back. Here's what we got. We got baseball for the final segment of the show. And it's a pretty good lineup tonight, but it's highlighted by Georgia Tech and Georgia. Now, I don't care. It doesn't matter what the sport is. Anytime the Jackets and the Dogs get together, you know it's going to be good. So here's the deal. It's the biggest game on the schedule tonight. There's no doubt about it. Georgia Tech taking on Georgia. The last time out, the Jackets outslugged the Dogs. 7-5 was your final. Georgia Tech's first win in Athens since 2015. We had Justin Henry Malloy on the show about a week or so ago. He had a three-run homer in the first inning, and the rest was history. Georgia Tech goes for the sweep tonight. So, again, Dogs, Jackets, anytime they get together, it's all good. All right, so that's your highlight tonight. But we've got other games of note. That includes Duke and Davidson. Duke and Davidson. It's been about a good week and a half for Duke basketball, baseball, football, lacrosse, softball, you name the sport, tennis. Duke's been on a roll. Duke holds a plus 48 run differential in the first four innings. They have outscored their opponents 148 to 100. There's Duke guy taking his guy's head off right there. Duke and Davidson getting after it tonight. And Duke, by the way, fresh off a sweep of the Virginia Tech Hokies over the weekend. And the Hokies have really been struggling. But, man, Duke's feeling pretty good about life right now. They're hitting the baseball, getting the job done. So Duke Davidson tonight in addition to Georgia at Georgia Tech. We've also got FAU at Miami. Miami, by the way, is seeking to finish the season undefeated in midweek games for the first time since the 2006 season. They are 7-0 this season in midweek games. Again, Miami, wildly inconsistent. When they're on, they have been out of sight. But sometimes, and Coach even told us, yeah, we just sometimes fake left, go right on that deal too. But Miami's been out of sight midweek, as we mentioned, undefeated this year. They've got FAU coming to town. Next game, we got Wake Forest. They are on the road at Coastal Carolina. You know, shot to clear is always good in baseball. Deeks, of course, had a tough weekend in Charlottesville. Brock Wilkin, though, he's got 15 home runs. That's the most by a true freshman in D1 baseball. Going yard. And there have been some bombs hitting Winston-Salem this year. But Brock has been on fire taking care of business in that department. Wake Forest on the road at Coastal Carolina. UNC Wilmington rolling into Chapel Hill to take on North Carolina. The Heels, of course, are looking to reach three games over 500 for the first time since April 25th. Now, keep in mind, though, the Heels are fresh off of sweeping Louisville. Probably as impressive a three-game sweep as they've had in a long, long time. So North Carolina feeling a little bit better about life. But UNC Wilmington comes to Chapel Hill. And the Heels looking to take care of business. That's games on, by the way, at 6 p.m. right here on ACC Network. Finally, we've got the Merrimack. They're at Boston College. Sal Frelick is on a 14-game hitting streak. He has been absolutely out of sight. He's second in the ACC with 66 hits this season. And BC, after a quick start, looking to finish strong, see what goes on here. But that's what you got going on tonight. BC, Merrimack. And by the way, one more thing for the biggest game of the night, which is Georgia Tech. Luke Waddell is the toughest strikeout in the ACC, averaging 12.8 at-bats per strikeout. All right, so keep that in mind. That's of all the games tonight, if I had to pick one, this would be the one that you keep an eye on. Georgia Tech. All right, should be a good one. 6 o'clock tonight. And, of course, you got the final weekend series, which will really be Thursday, Friday, Saturday for everybody in the ACC, because beginning next week, the ACC baseball tournament right here in Charlotte, NC, and you'll be good to go. So there you have it. All right. Tomorrow, by the way, on the program, the commissioner of the ACC, Jim Phillips, is going to be on the show. And I look forward to having commissioner on here because he just got done finishing up the listening tour, right? And one of the things he told us the first time he was on with us, he said, I just want to listen and see what we've got here in the ACC. I know he just finished up going to Clemson on Friday, which I believe was the last of the 15 stops. So getting the commissioner on here will be really interesting. One of the things we definitely want to get into him with, in addition to what he found out listening to everybody in the league, is also the college football playoff, where he said earlier this week that, you know what, let's take our time and get this thing right. And I think that's 100% right in terms of the approach, because in this day and age, you got to figure change is inevitable, in my opinion. I've said it for years. I think it's inevitable that we're going to get an expansion of the college football playoff. But what is the right number? 4-6, 4-8. A lot of folks say, oh, let's go to 16 like the FCS does. I'm not sure that's the exact answer, but, you know, say it all the time. Nothing gets done until something gets sold. But we'll have Commissioner Phillips on the program tomorrow, and look forward to touching base with him to see where it goes. Lots of fun today with the guest. A lot of folks making their debut. That include Jamie Ashworth, the outstanding coach of the Duke women's program. They take on number one seed North Carolina. That is tomorrow. And, of course, we still have a couple teams left. NC State is the sixth seed. They'll take on Georgia. The seven seed's Florida State. They'll take on the number two seed Texas. Appreciate Jamie joining us. And also Link Jarrett, who has done a brilliant job at Notre Dame. The Irish have already clinched the Atlantic Division. They're good to go. They got Virginia Tech in their last conference series, and then they'll come rolling in here to Charlotte for the ACC tournament. And you just heard from Lars Tiffany running the show for Virginia Lacrosse. They've got Georgetown coming up this weekend. Great job by everybody back in Bristol, as usual. Josh, Drew, Jen, back row, Hank, everybody. West Durham's still on vacation. Anisha's frozen in time. We're back tomorrow for another edition of Packer and Durham, right here on ACC Network. Folks, enjoy your Tuesday.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.